Shut up and sit down.
The push bike has made a big comeback, and that's terrific because riding push bikes is a really healthy pastime.
Who did it?
Lance Romance.
Really? Lance, come here. It's week 9 and Lance is still making rookie mistakes. I want Lance to learn these things because if he learns them, our whole crew benefits from it.
So you get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
Check it out. Yeah, y'all, here we go again. Turn it up. Bring the noise. You are listening to the Dialed Podcast with Matt Lee Grand, Lance Hepler, and Jake Von Turing. Bass, how low can you go?
Joey Jojo!
Hi, welcome back to the Dialed Podcast. I'm Jake Von Turing here with Lance, friggin' happy boy, Hepler.
Happy boy or happy birthday?
Or happy birthday boy.
Happy, birthday, happy birthday boy.
Thank you.
Lance, freaking 54 Hepler.
54.
54. Freaking Hepler, birthday to
celebrate. I was way off on your age. Let's all elevate. Blow out your 84
candles. Wish real quick. I think Matt said you're turning 84 today.
He said I turned 84. Yeah.
Yeah.
So close. So. Right there.
What are you doing for your birthday today, Lance?
I feel 84. What am I doing for my birthday? I'm recording this show with you fine people, and then I'm driving to Utah.
That sounds good.
Like you do, right?
Yes.
I want to listen to these lyrics because I have a sneaking suspicion there's some funny ones in there, but I don't think we have time for that because you got to get to Utah.
Okay. We'll have to. You'll have to send it out. We'll put it at the end of the show.
Oh, yeah. Put it at the end of the show.
Well, bumper music.
I love our normal bumper music, but that's okay. This will be good.
We'll put it there. So you guys, if you want to listen to that, we'll toss it up there. So, all right. To Lance's. Let me turn this off. Shut up. It's not your birthday anymore.
It's not my birthday. Done with that crap.
To Lance is right. Sir Ian Gibson.
Sir Ian Gibson. Hello.
Hey-o.
Gibbo.
Do I not get any music?
No. I don't know. That was decent.
Is it your birthday? Then no.
No,
yeah, so suck it.
No. Okay. You got a birthday coming up? Okay.
I mean, we could.
There it is.
Gibbo.
I love that one, actually. Just the trumpet
there
coming in.
There you go. Now I feel at home.
All right. Okay. So proper moving forward, you will get that, but you get to lay your own lyrics over it unless you really screw up. Okay. All right. Let's start over again. It keeps wanting to play. We'll just shut that off. Anyway, to Ian's right, Matt LeGrand.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen of the internet? You guys look birthday-tastic.
Birthday-tastic. Look at this. Matt brought me a birthday gift. You two suck. But thank you very much for bringing me a birthday gift with the fantastic card. Very sentimental.
Kinda, I feel like the lumberjack. Did you cry about? Yeah, I mean, I can tell. The tears are streaming. So there's the lumberjack down there.
The lumberjack.
It's kind of nice. I don't know if the lumberjack fits, but it kind of does. It's got a stash, and it kind of feels like a Lance vibe to it.
Oh, and Matt got me
a
gift. A swim, bike, run, rinse, repeat.
And why would you need a triathlon hat?
Because I'm a time trial
I am a very competitive person, and I certainly am always motivated by doing certain things. One of them is trying to be the best type of triathlete that I can be and try to be as fast as I can be.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lance Hepler making his triumphant return to
triathlon. It seems there's a piece of like paper in here that's keeping its form for the...
Feels good, man.
Feels good.
Yeah, actually, it looks pretty good on you, too. That's a sharp-looking little hat there.
Yeah.
Well, Matt LeGrand's got some good merch going on.
It's comfy. That's good merch.
It's good merch.
Yeah.
Well, wait your turn. Wait your turn, guys.
Cool.
You don't have one, do you? Because
I have a T-shirt with
But those are cool because they actually say like
the swim and the run are blanked out.
Yeah, are marked out.
They're marked out.
Which is maybe a little more fitting. But now that you're diving back into, triathlons,
I returned the borrowed wheels today. I'm done with that crap.
Mm-hmm. I still haven't washed the returned speed suit.
I washed.
I never will wash that speed suit.
All right, how about some backpedaling? We had a couple of the boys here. You guys did some racing. We'll let you guys go last, finish this off. Matt, would you like to kick us off?
I can be fast because I've mostly been running every day. It's been glorious. I ran 7 miles on Friday and 7 miles today. It was just pouring down rain on my run this morning. Glorious. And I looked at my watch, and I was like, 7:30s. And then at one point it was like 6:30s. And I was like, oh, this
you're,
is...
You're feeling it a little bit.
Feeling a little bit of get up and go in the step. I mean, I average probably 8 minutes or whatever. I on purpose slow down the last mile. I'm like, this is too much. Don't need to go fast. I have no business going fast. I have nothing coming up. No racing. No even like prospective things coming in the near future. But I'm really enjoying getting out there in the mud, slopping around on the trails.
Yeah.
And if you need to find me, Heritage Trail.
That's yep. the spot.
That's me. Heritage yeah, Trail.
She's the mayor.
From like eight, yeah, I'm the mayor from like 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning. It's just like, you can find me there.
Sweet.
Love it.
I'll go next. I did everything that Matt did, minus the running.
Ah. A little bit more lifting, probably.
I did go to the gym. I did take my dogs for a walk, though. I was at a 15 and a half minute pace. So
okay.
Right there with you. Right there
did
with
you. Did you put it on Strava?
Yeah, yeah, but you can't see it.
Oh. So yeah, I need private to like make Strava. Mine. I need to make mine public because I always forget. I always mess yeah. that up.
I turned off that so it wouldn't pop up in your feed so that you're watching Jake walk dogs because that's just not exciting. And I'm still patiently waiting for my new doctor to give me a call. It's been a week and a half. Doc, hey, right here, you know, this guy Jeez. Over here, remember the one that said, yeah, this is not urgent, but yeah, let's get this taken care of. He's like, I got you, man. I got you. And we're going to get this taken care of right away. Week and a half later. Over a week and a half later.
Still nothing.
Still no word. I'll be calling them when we are done recording.
Tell me about the weightlifting. Is it just are you regressing some because you're not lifting as much? Or are you?
No, I'm still doing all my lifts. I'm still going 4 days a week. Nice. Actually, I went 3 days last week because I did have a little bit of a cold earlier in the week. So I just gave myself a day off. But the lifting is going very well.
What's your split, Jake? How do you work this?
Work what?
Your weightlifting. How do you split it up over the week?
Right now I'm kind of sort of transitioning out of like a strength phase and trying to make it a little bit more functional, specific more to cycling and mm-hmm. trying not to do the types of exercises that are going to cause me to hypertrophy because I don't need to hypertrophy anymore. I'm trying to do the exact opposite of that. Just trying to maintain strength, get good functional range of motion, good muscle balance, and then have something that once I do finally get this procedure done and that back behind me in my rearview mirror so that I can actually get back on the bike, it'll be something that my strength hopefully will translate really well to getting back on the bike. And then it's just a matter of logging yeah. the miles to get the fitness built back up so that I can start to keep up with you jokers.
Yeah.
Good times,
yeah.
eh?
Yeah, yeah.
So this should be fun. Right now, though, it is a lot more of not like just isolated body parts or groupings of body parts in a day. It's more of like a little bit more of a full body workout and trying to do stuff that kind of challenges me from a multi-joint perspective so that I'm, you know, kind of working on
right.
stuff that's going right. to, again, translate well to riding bicycles. Because I do hope to get back to that someday in the future. Who knows? Anyway, that's it. All right, you two guys. Which one of you guys wants to go first? Backpedaling this past just few days we had, but there was a pretty fun little bike race in there.
Yeah, Ian, I'll go first.
Go for it.
I'm traditionally briefer than Lance on my race descriptions, but
also true.
We both of us were out. Both of us plus another 23 other teammates.
We had 29 Dodd Cycling
29
racers yeah, this weekend great. At the Gorge Gravel Grinder. 29.
Great showing.
Is that any kind of a record for a breakaway?
I don't know. That's a ton.
That's a lot of people from one yeah. team. So
I don't think there was any podiums that did not feature a dialed athlete.
There were a couple. The long didn't have any. Yeah.
But that was...
Yeah. That might come up in our topic today. We'll have to talk about that.
All right.
Maybe. I don't know. We'll see.
Anyway, yeah, so I did the medium grinder. Gorge Gravel Grinder out in Duffer, Oregon.
Stats on that. What are the stats on the medium
in terms it was of distance and about EG? 65 miles and 5,600 plus meters of climbing.
It that's was feet like, of climbing.
Feet of climbing.
To yeah. me, that's kind of like the sweet spot for me personally. I don't necessarily need to go out and do a century plus on a gravel bike. And I also don't want to go out there and just like, I don't know, be done in like an hour and a half on something that's like 30 miles long. So
yeah,
2 hours, whatever.
No, it was good. I mean, it felt like a full day. It was 3:38, I think was my time. So, you know, it's a 3 to 4 hour effort. And it was great. I mean, the way they had it set up, I think they said that there was 1,100
participants across three distances.
And get this, my category, the super old geezers, 60 plus, there was 42 starters.
Wow.
People above 60. Yeah, people in their 60s and 70s. So I did good, of which I managed to get second place.
Sweet. So,
yeah, that's 2 seconds and a third I've gotten this year.
What was the sketchiest part of the race for you? Did you have a sketchy part?
Not really. There was a couple of those longer, looser downhills that I saw an impending corner coming up and thought, I'm just about going to make it around this, but it was fine. And even there was a so-called spicy section that even I, as a diehard roadie, did not find too challenging.
All right.
It was good.
There was a half-mile section that was double track, not even a farm road, went through, it had a big puddle at the bottom of this dip that you had to ride through. Big rocks in it, baby goat heads everywhere. So that's the spicy section. But
sure.
Anyway, sort of 5 miles from the start, I knew that there was a steep climb coming up, so I tried to light it up there, tried to split things up, and sure enough, a group of five of us got away, like away by a huge gap. But I ended up being the weakest in that group. And then after that spicy section, I got dropped off the back of that and spent a long time trying to catch on. But, eventually, I caught up with all but one of those guys that left me.
Nice.
So, it was good. Yeah. I worked with Gary Cornelius for a while, a teammate there. We rode together for probably 30 minutes and then I think he cramped, on one of the downhills, actually. I was going downhill, which is not my strength, and I looked behind and Gary was gone, so I pressed on. But
how is this old roadie converting over to the old gravel scene? Are you enjoying this?
Yeah. I think gravel is a good discipline. I mean, it's got a little bit of everything. It doesn't rely on your technical skills, but you do need to have some bike handling.
It's just one more dynamic that you could add in there. Yeah,
and it's good to be away from the traffic,
sure.
But I don't know. It's always that ride, I think, was 60% gravel, something like that.
Okay.
And it was always felt so good to be when you actually turned onto a road and it was a level surface. Things got quieter and smoother and it was nice. But yeah.
Cool.
It was good. Before I hand it over, I did want to give a big shout out to my Dialed performance coaching clients. There's five
of
those guys
showed up and race.
It was the A race for a few of them, and they did awesome. Don Schloth was super happy with his performance in the small gravel grinder. He was pumped about that. I think he got fifth in his category.
Yeah,
he did great. Yeah, and Mike Hansen was there. He put out some solid numbers. Jim O'Brien had a good race as well. Big shout out to my clients Rob Poole and also Jin Daikoku. Jin was the only guy there that did not have a good race. Unfortunately, he crashed out.
Did he DNF?
I think so.
Yes, yeah.
He had like a shift lever.
He broke the shift lever off, and he took a chunk out of his ass.
Yeah. So
ripped his kit.
Not good. Yeah. But then I saw yesterday evening while we were all laying on the couch, he was back on Swift putting in a run.
He went home and got on Swift.
Yeah. That's a good way to rally back. I mean, just get back on the horse, right?
And Jin is super strong. He's the strongest client I've got right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay. That's good to hear.
He would have mixed it up for the win in his field.
Yeah.
And he was with the leaders, I think, when he went down.
Was it just not getting ahead of himself, but just maybe being a little bit too aggressive?
I don't actually know the story, but he crashed on that
spicy
section.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. It was a great day out for my coaching guys and a really good day out for the team. It was great to be there.
It was awesome.
Yeah, I was conversing back and forth with Jen because we're going to get him set up with, basically Corey is our our kit supplier and whatnot. And they do a deal where if you crash, they'll get you whatever piece you have, they will replace it for 50% off, which is pretty stinking cool considering because I don't think it really matters how old the kid is too. So
yeah, I've been a recipient of that.
It's a really good program and not for nothing. It's kind of cool because they don't ask you to send the damaged kit back. So you could just, if it's not terribly bad, you could stitch it back up and just use it for training and, or you just have it as a backup or whatnot. So
then our helmets casked and they have similar.
They do. Setup. You took advantage of that once too.
I did.
But good times. Cool.
That's all I got.
Hepler?
Yeah, so I did the same race as Ian, but I did the baby race. I did the small gravel grinder, not the medium. The small gravel grinder was 45 miles and 3,500 feet of elevation, so a little bit more faster. Because this was a little odd this year, is because there were so many participants in this race, they had separate starts for every category. Mm-hmm. So, but they only had three categories: an open category, a 45 to 59 masters category, and a 60 plus supermasters category. Uh-huh. So they only had but all the waves were like 10 minutes apart. And normally they would start all the medium together, all the small together, but this year it was split up. So I started with the group, but that I was in the small grinder 45 to 59. I want to say there were 75 people in my field, mm-hmm. and we had four or five teammates. It was an odd race experience for me. It was the oddest gravel race experience I've had because I rode solo all day. I never had somebody to work with the whole day. We did the neutral section. Me and my teammates were all sitting on the front for the neutral section when they honked the horn and let us go. It started with like an 8 mile climb, but like a mile of it was really steep. And as soon as we hit the really steep part, I kind of hit it hard just to spread it out.
Yeah, that's where I hit it.
Yeah, you hit it the gravel steep part too. Yes. And nobody went with me.
Yeah.
So I rode off the front and I probably only had like a 40 second gap at the top of the climb, but I couldn't tell where they were because we were already catching people from other waves. And I rode the whole race by myself.
I know that feeling all too well. I've done that one other time. As a matter of fact, at Barton Park. And I remember going off the front and you're like, all right, they're just going to catch up to me in a matter of time. Or maybe in an ideal situation, a teammate or two would bridge up to me and we can work together. I need some teammates up here to work with me. That'd be fantastic. And then you're like halfway through race and like, they're not catching up to me. And this kind of sucks because I'm working my butt off and you know, you're just like, well, I can't give up. You just got to keep going. Just keep going until the catch. And then all of a sudden you're like, we're getting really deep into this race. I'm like, I'm starting to waste all my bullets. I'm not trying to hijack your thing here, but you're like, did I do too much work to stay off the front? And they're just going to come and swallow me up and I'm going to get spit out the back. Like that typically happens when you get caught up and you get close to the finish and you see it in sight and you're just still working really hard. You cross the finish line going, my God, I can't believe I just did that. And I won. This is pretty cool.
I was riding scared the whole time.
Yeah.
Because I was certain that there was going to be four or five guys that got together and worked together and
catch me. No support vehicle that's out in front of you guys because it's not a road race. So you're not getting like time splits or anything like that.
Nothing.
So they could be 20 seconds behind you or they could be 20 minutes behind you. No
correct.
Idea.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's tough.
For and that. I kept thinking I would catch somebody that I could work with, but
from the earlier waves
and everybody I caught was just,
nope.
It just wasn't working.
Off the back for a reason. Yeah. Yeah.
So I ended up winning I ended up winning by almost 6 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. And our second place was our own teammate, Mike Hamness.
Yeah, Mike.
So he had a freaking awesome race. Yeah. So
did you yell at him though? Like, dude, where were you? Dude, I was waiting for you.
I needed help. You should have just got up to me. Anyway, so it ended up being a great day. I feel great. I took a ton of flack for doing the small grinder from all sorts of people, all in good fun mostly. And it was pretty cool. Even the podium announcer gave me grief.
Ripped you a little bit too, huh?
But it was Matt Lieto, who's the Iron Man. Yeah. He did the podium announcing. And so he knows who I am. So he was more than welcome to rib me a little bit, which is great.
He's a funny guy.
He is a funny guy.
Yeah. I've raced him a long time ago.
Yeah, he's a good guy. But the podium prizes, they gave away a hydro flask that was printed with your category and your place. Oh, wow. And then the winners got an engraved slate like trophy. It looks like a paddle board. It looks like a cutting board with like stone slate in the middle that is engraved with the race and your category.
Uh-huh.
And the race organizers had my name engraved onto the thing before they gave it to us on the podium. Had,
like, laser etching done, like, right on the site premises. Or something like
this. So all the winners had their names engraved on the thing.
Yeah,
and so nice. I go up to Chad Sperry, who's the race organizer, and I'm like, dude, how did you do this? How did you get our names on here? And he's like, well, we saw your name on the list and just figured that you were going to win.
Yeah.
He goes, no, we bought an engraving machine. And so Colleen is over in this trailer over
here.
Knocking
them out.
She's
yeah.
knocking out the putting names on all the things. So that was kind of a cool touch that I've never seen before yeah. at like a race like this. Sure. But Chad Sperry puts on a really good race.
Yeah. So. And they're just getting bigger and more popular. So good on them.
Yeah. 1,100 participants.
Imagine if you had 1,100 people at Barton Park. What would you do with yourself?
Oh, my gosh. We couldn't do it. It's too many people.
speaking of, do you have a cap on that race?
No cap.
Okay.
No.
And registration's open, right?
It is open.
And so you've got people that are signing up, right?
Yeah. I've got people seem to be waiting until the last minute. At least I hope that's what's happening because we need people to sign up.
All right. We'll talk about that more later then. Okay. For sure. Cool. Gotcha. Anything else fun happened during that race? Anything challenging, technical? Anything sketchy? Anything?
I had no trouble. No. The beautiful part of it was there's a route along that we go along the ridge, like a 20-mile section that goes along the ridge, and it was a screaming tailwind. Mm-hmm. So we were doing like 30 miles an hour on the gravel.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's the spot where we did the reverse course of previous years, mm-hmm. so it's usually an ugly headwind for 20 miles.
Wow.
And he reversed course this year, and the wind cooperated.
Okay.
But then we turned 90 degrees, and I was going down that long hill. I was
into the wind.
Leaning against the wind like my...
Oh, geez.
Yes.
Yeah.
So how did Mike Hamm just took second in your race?
Yes.
How did that pan out for him? Did he drop people? Was it spicy, or did it get kind of like a little choppy or dicey towards him?
He just rode away from people. His fitness was good enough that he just was able to ride away
good
from people.
Job.
Because he beat the third place guy by like 4 minutes.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
And Eric Duggar was fourth in our age group.
Look at that. Yeah. He tested really well. I'm guessing his brother Terry was not out there, correct?
Terry was not. No.
Okay.
He has been riding a little bit, but privately riding.
As soon as I can return to riding, I'll be giving Terry a call because I think he can help me get back into shape.
That'd be good.
Cool.
He's been doing some quiet riding, and he could use some pushing. That'd be nice.
Well, I could use some pushing.
Yes.
But if he's been doing quiet riding, I don't know, maybe I don't want to call him. we'll see here. Cool. Anything else from that?
No, I think it's all good.
Yeah. Cool. I am dealing with some serious FOMO from that. I had an entry. I was supposed to be out there and didn't work out. So was David Root out there?
No.
Yes. Yes, he was.
He was?
Yeah. How did he do?
I never saw David.
He did. Okay, I guess.
Okay.
He
did
a 3:45. I specifically looked at his time.
That was my entry, though. So,
David was there, and there's a couple of POA guys there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sweet. Good. Awesome, awesome. Good job, both of you.
Thank you.
Podiums.
Cool. Good work, gentlemen.
All right, let's move on.
Champ Bailey in sports.
Champ friggin' Bailey.
Champ is here.
He's here.
Okay, I'm going to start with...
Champ, when's your birthday?
What?
When's your birthday, Champ?
My Champ birthday?
No one knows.
Yeah.
No one knows.
It's a mystery.
You know what's interesting is the collective group think where we were so sure that the guy's name was Champ Bailey that was on Anchorman.
Yeah.
Like, what happened? We all Champ were kind, so yep. sure
we blew it. Yeah.
that guy, that was his name. It was Champ something else.
Champ kind.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why we thought that there was a group think there.
Yeah. Yep.
100%.
Yeah, it is what it is, but worked out for us.
It worked out for
worked
us.
Worked great for the podcast. Still has been.
What up, Champ?
So I'm going to give the results for the pro elites for the Gorge Gravel Rinder because it was won by one of those New Zealanders that came over for POA.
Good. Really?
Yes.
Wow.
23-year-old kid named Finn Mitchell.
Okay.
So he came over,
Did he do the flogging ride too? Is it?
He might have been on the flogging ride.
Because I remember that was there was one where those guys went after it.
Yeah, there was a couple.
Yeah, they were on it.
So Finn won. He was racing with Max Ritzau, mm-hmm. who has won this race previously. Those two guys are both 23 years old. So Finn first, Max Ritzau second, and freaking Aristophocles was third, the 44-year-old from Bend.
Wow.
So he's super solid. So those three guys won the elite men. The elite women was won by Sarah Max. So, okay. So she's in the Lifetime Grand Prix Fitness again this year. She had a flat early on and thought her day was over and ended up being able to fix it and chased back on.
Who else was in that field with her?
Chloe Spritz.
Okay.
And Claire Law and Becca Book. So not a whole big lot of pro elite women. But I did want to mention that for Dialed, we had a whole bunch of podiums.
All right.
A whole bunch of podiums. I won the Masters Men's Small Grinder. Mike Hannes was second. The Medium Grinder Open Men was won by our own Zach Winter.
That boy, Zach.
Yes. So Zach won, beat a POA guy, Josiah. Mm-hmm. And Paul First was third.
Hey.
Yes. So
did he and Zach work together at all?
The three of them were all together for a while. Paul ended up dropping off a little bit. And then Zach and Josiah actually sprinted it out.
Really?
Yeah. And Zach got him by like 0.3 of a second.
Wow.
So
was that fun to watch? Were you there able to see
that? I was not. I didn't see that.
Okay.
But Zach was like pumped and thrilled. And so was Paul for making a podium in that race, which is just fantastic. Mark Lochteff took second in the Masters Men Medium Grinder behind mm-hmm. Paul Borsier. That yep. was fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that's a great result. Gibbo took second in his race. Tracy Elween took second in the Masters Women.
Atta girl, Tracy.
Yes. So many podiums. It's kind of hard to... And then we had in the Open Men... Small Gravel, Edward Dudlick won it as well. So Dudlick,
Edward, friend of the show, been on the show before. Fantastic job.
Yeah, so he did a great job. So we had three different winners in three different categories and like eight different people on the podium.
Mm-hmm.
So just fantastic. I don't want to miss anybody. But me and Mike Hamness, and yeah, I think if I missed you, then I'm a loser. So sorry. Can't be. Okay, what else happened? We had the Belgian Waffle Ride that happened
in San Diego. Right?
Yeah. So this was the final race of their Triple Crown series for San Diego. The big news was that Alejandro Valverde showed up.
Wow.
To
that race, huh?
To that race. This was going to be his first U.S. gravel race.
Sure.
And there was a lot of concern about Valverde in the field, but... he flatted at mile 40 and couldn't fix his flat very well.
He doesn't have the team car. He's not used to not having the team car right there.
You can have outside support at Belgian Waffle Ride, but it wasn't like close by. So it.
I find it interesting that I think we're going to start seeing this where we have like all the best riders in the world from Pro Tour teams. As they retire, they switch to gravel or whatever, and they're in the U.S. because we don't get to see these guys easily, but we also have the best gravel riding in the world in the U.S., and that's just my humble opinion, and that might change.
Best gravel racing at the moment, for sure.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Valverde kind of washed out, but the men's race was won by Matt Beers, which he is the former motocross rider turned... gravel guy that's got a 480-watt FTP.
Like you do.
And
it's like the next Johnny O'Mara.
I don't know. He's won Cape Epic three times with a teammate. So he's very strong. Very mostly a mountain biker, but
he's an athlete, yeah.
Yeah, he's fast. So he won the men's race. Sofia Gomez Villafane won the women's race. And so good on them. So that was a big race, lots of people there. What else has happened in the world of racing? We did have the Tour of the Gila, the only U.S. stage race that's put on by the UCI this year.
This is an awesome story. Go ahead.
And, well, for the pro men, I know that Tyler Stites won, but we did have a teammate down there
as well.
So Kylie Hannell, the daughter of our own very...
Joey Joe Jr. Sabadoo.
She went down there. Mom took her down there. She lined up for the races. There was two road stage races, a crit, and a time trial. I believe she took third.
First road race, she took third, right?
Yep. The time trial, she took second. Uh-huh. I don't know how she did in the crit.
Not sure, but she probably did all right.
Yeah, but she ended up third overall on GC in the women's 2-3.
Yeah.
So that was the category she raced, the women's 2-3. So
amazing.
Freshly minted 18-year-old out there racing bikes, yep, having fun, just... She's
crushing
18. Yeah. That's what I was wondering.
She's 18. She's got such a cool little disposition about her too. Like she's just got like no fear, but her mom was reporting back and her dad wrote up a cool little thing about how freaking nervous she was. I'm like, that's not normally her, but yeah. I can get it. Like you're in a different state. This is a big race. They petitioned for her to get a category upgrade from a 4 to a 3 so that she could race in the 2-3. So she kind of maybe felt like she's a little bit out of her element, but this is such a vote of confidence for her. I love it.
Yes.
So, and like, if you think she's good on the road, get her off road. She's even faster.
Yeah. She prefers off road racing.
Yeah, she loves the mountain bike stuff. Yeah. So, but she just likes all bikes, like her dad. So,
she actually, maybe I shouldn't share this, but she actually raced all the road races in SPDs and mountain bike shoes.
Seriously, yes. Love it.
I don't think you lose that much.
No, you don't. It's just what you know. It's what she has and what
what you prefer and what you're used to. And sick. There's real value there and being like, so, this is, it's easy for me to click out. You know, right. Yeah. I don't know.
Cool.
Love it.
Good job, Kylie.
Good job, Kylie.
Hey, are you? Is there more?
Nope. Champ is done.
Not yet.
Champ out.
Wasn't there another mountain bike race, Coast Hills, this past weekend?
Oh my gosh! Yeah, there was. So Coast Hills Classic.
I have no info on this. So what happened?
So Coast Hills Classic was the third race in the Oregon XC Series race. It was a complete mud fest again because Newport, Oregon.
And it rained pretty good this
weekend.
And
it rained and rained. All I know is that what happened in my own field, my own category, pardon me, in Lance's own category, this is still Champ Bailey. Todd Edwards, our teammate, the Camus Phantom, was out there. I was desperately trying to get him to win the race. I'd been coaching him on what to do and where to attack and who to watch and what names you had to keep track of. And he ended up second by like 30 seconds.
Job, Todd.
Yeah, so Todd made the podium again. So that that race was won by Rocky Coomlin, who I battled at this race last year.
Yep.
So good on them.
Do we have a decent showing out there, though? Of teammates?
No, there was like 4 people.
That's it, huh?
Because everyone was at the Gorge race.
Yeah, I was curious if that was going to... I wonder if their numbers were down because of that.
I guarantee
you. I mean, with 1,100 people out doing the Gorge Gravel Grinder, you have to think that, oh, we're second-guessing the fact that we put those on the same day.
Just our team, there were probably 5 or 6 people that would have been at the Coast Hills Classic if they weren't on the same day.
Yeah. Do you think anybody skipped on the race because of the weather?
That's possible.
Yeah.
That happens too.
Well, hopefully they add some decent numbers. So cool.
Coast Hills Classic app. Good job, Todd.
Tweet. Anything else?
That's it. Champ out.
Thanks, champ. All right, dude. We kind of did a topic similar. Well, the theme of the topic was similar to this. Gosh, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. And I think it was actually suggested to us by your friend Ryan.
Oh, Ryan, how's Ryan Lee?
How's Ryan doing?
He's doing great. He's in Vegas. He's loving life. He's living.
He had a topic for us, and it was, is the juice worth the squeeze? And that was a fun one. And
I remember that. Yeah, I remember him suggesting that.
I remember wanting to come back to that. And here we are, fast forward a few years later. And the question is, again, is the juice worth the squeeze? So there's a few things, a few questions that we all kind of pre-talked about out here. And we wanted to kind of run around the table. We didn't get any responses from each other. But we want to know, is the juice worth the squeeze? And I'm kind of curious what people think about this too. If you guys are listening to this and you want to chime in on our social medias, whether it be Instagram or Facebook.
Comment on Instagram. We usually post the entire podcast gets like a little, a really cool thumbnail piece, and that usually gets posted to Instagram.
Yeah. Go say something there.
Following that and leaving a comment.
Yep. Cool. All right. So the first one, and this one's kind of timely because there's some people that made some decisions this past weekend and it maybe didn't work out so well. So maybe that's kind of answers your question, but in years past it has. So this question is if you're going to go into a gravel bike race, is the juice worth the squeeze by using road tires, like an oversized road tire, like a 20, 30, 32 versus like more of a traditional gravel tire? Is it worth it? Is it worth the risk? Is the risk worth the reward? Because we heard questions, or not questions, but we saw results last year where people went out on 30s?
Yes.
And crushed.
And crushed.
This year, seems like some people tried that, didn't quite pan out so well for
them. So let's go over the rationale for that. So that, at least the medium course, I don't know about the long, probably similar, but there was about 40% of that course was tarmac, was road. And the gravel section, the gravel was mostly good, solid, easy gravel.
Yeah.
So you can see the reasoning behind it.
And even pre-riding, some of us pre-rode and were like, dude, I could put 30s on this bike and be fine on this course. So
let me ask you another question. Are you going to use like more of a traditional like road race tire? Are you going to put on something that maybe has a little bit more?
No, I would not use a road race tire. Okay. I would do something
like
with
an all seasoner or something with
or just a little side knob, like a 30 file gravel
tread,
tire.
File that, tread something.
Yeah, that's either bald or, you know, or we put something a little bit on the sides. Similar to what they do at Belgian Waffle Ride is a similar conundrum because there's these off-road sections, but then it's 70% on the tarmac, on the road. And so a lot of guys race Belgian Waffle Ride on 30s, same thing, but...
I mean, I was thinking about my cyclocross tires, my file tread tires that are 33, and I think that would have been just about the sweet spot.
It could have been.
Narrower than that? Well, I don't
now,
know.
Now, were there people out there that were on more of a traditional road bike tire with nothing in it?
I think there were.
And how did that pan out for them?
I don't know. So I know three stories that happened of people who did 30s or less or road tires on that, and all of them had disasters. So I don't know about the people who might have been on
who pulled it off
30s and pulled it off.
Yeah,
but we had a teammate who rode his road bike but put 30 millimeter gravel tires on, but they were very thin, and he had a flat that took him a long time to solve. Mm-hmm. He had a 30 minute flat repair, so that was a bit of a disaster. One of our frenemies of the show, Rob Tornai, he was also on a road bike. I don't know how big his tires were, but I think they were. And he's won this race several times. He's very fast.
Uh-huh.
And he had a flat that took him out of contention. He still ended up fourth.
Okay, now, given the circumstances, you probably don't know, but was it the tire's fault that he got a flat? Or was it just like he would have got a flat no matter what tire he was on?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Yeah. And then I guess the other question for this is like, if you're riding on like a traditional road tire, like mostly slick tire, are you going to lose the time that you're gaining when you're talking about having to like negotiate cornering and loose stuff where you're having to get after it or having to like recover for something that happened in the road? Like, are you going to make up that time by, you know, having a slick when you're able to like just get after it on the road sections, like the tarmac sections or the very polished gravel sections?
Well, the thing about the polished gravel sections is there were still very sharp, loose rocks that you had to watch for. You couldn't like...
Hence gravel?
Yes, racing. Hence gravel. But it was odd. It wasn't like fresh gravel. I mean, the gravel was really buffed out. You know, it was almost tarmac. Mm-hmm. But then there was lots of loose
stuff,
small rocks that were really sharp, and so you had to pay attention. You couldn't just put your head down and drill it like you can on the tarmac, you know. So I think that's what caught up with people, because all the people except for one that I know that were on, you know, narrow tires and flatted, all of them were on the regular champagne roads, not on the spicy.
It does kind of make sense that tire choice would be more risky as far as flats go, because you need to have a lower tire pressure, and so if your tire is a smaller cross section, you're much more likely, you know, that ratio between tire pressure and tire width is critical when it comes to like pinch flats.
Yes.
Okay.
So it's like pinch flats and washing out, more contact space.
Well, yes.
Here's another question that I would have. Sorry, Matt.
No, it'd
be like, what if there was an attack and you had to get out of the saddle and really get after it on a dirt section? Are you going to get out of your saddle and all of a sudden your back tire is breaking loose? Or what about the finish line? Was that on dirt or was that
on pavement?
It was on pavement. Okay, so that's actually going to play to your advantage or play to your favor there. But
actually, the big grinder finish line was on gravel.
Was it?
But the small and medium were on pavement.
The big grinder, is that the one that Zach won, or did you do the medium?
No, Zach did the medium.
Okay, so I was going to say, like, for that finish in particular, if they had to get after it, let's say he was in the big one, would it have created a a disparity, yeah, just discrepancy there between their ability to get out and sprint.
The road tire would have definitely got up to speed faster than the gravel tire.
But would have it broke loose?
No.
In the process of doing that?
That's a good question. Maybe.
I mean, I feel like gravel tires are already a good compromise between off-road and road tires. That's the way they're designed. Mm-hmm. So they actually roll pretty good on the tarmac.
I think that's a good point.
I don't feel I'm losing a lot of speed.
You're losing speed, but it's not much as you would think. No. Exactly.
So I
think
guess that's the topic, right? Is the
juice worth the squeeze?
Juice worth the squeeze.
So what say you? Is it worth the squeeze? Would you be?
It may be, but broadly speaking, I don't think the event itself, the race, is the time to be experimenting. Mm-hmm. If you've been out and done plenty of training miles under the same conditions and you've gotten used to it and you're happy with the setup and it's proven reliable, then do it on race day. But don't make any big changes to your setup. Mm-hmm. On an important event, just the same with your nutrition and everything like that. Don't mess it up on the day.
Yeah, and I guess another way to quantify this too would be like you guys can just take the race that you did yesterday. It was yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Would you have been any faster, knowing everything that you know, if you'd been on a slick road tire that was maybe a little bit narrower than what you were running on your bike yesterday? Would you have won by that much more? Would you have been able to get to the top step of the podium versus second place? Would have made any difference?
No, I'd have been slower for sure.
You think so?
Because my bike handling skills are not great anyway, so I need all the mechanical help I can get. But yeah, riding a narrower, slick tire, I would have been it would have been sketchy.
I think I would have been slower too, because I wouldn't have railed the descents as hard as I would have. I wouldn't have taken the gravel corners as hard as I would have because I had trust in the 38s that I was running.
The confidence factor played in. How about you, Matt?
I think that every single time you look at a course, it's just like all of these factors need to be taken into place. And so really it comes down to this particular race. Even within this race, it's like you've got three different courses where it's like might have made sense for two out of the three, and the third one, like the longer, whatever,
right.
Big Daddy, Big Grinder. Like, that's like, well, yeah, no, of course, like, you may even take a different choice at that level. So every single gravel course, I think, is going to have to be, like, individually analyzed, not only for tire choice, but also for tire pressure, probably, because it's such a spectrum. It's not just, like, a yay or nay, yes, this or no, that. I think that's my quick thoughts is, like, depends on the course. I mean, I bet you that these courses where you don't have to worry about descents or turns or whatever, and you're starting and finishing on some pretty plush, like, paved roads, I bet you there's some serious advantage there.
Well, take Unbound, for instance.
Yep.
You know, you definitely want a tire that has a little more volume and has very good puncture resistance, mm-hmm. because that's the biggest issue usually with Unbound is there's flat issues way more than in usual
the Flint
races.
Rock, they'll just
Flint Rock.
Slice you up.
I was watching Dylan Johnson's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that a 44 is the best all-around choice for these gravel races that these guys are doing right now.
Well, go ahead, Matt.
Oh, I was just thinking, like, we talked about this before, like, what was the average? We were talking about, like, Paris-Roubaix, I think.
We're talking about Paris-Roubaix because the average race, it was 32.
Yep.
And several teams were riding bikes that could have taken 40s, and 40s would have been faster, and they still put 32s on because tradition.
I think it's I think when we say stuff like 40s would have been faster, what we're probably saying is 40s would have been faster over the cobbles, but not over the 200-mile total distance. Yeah, so I think it's really hard to make the call on this stuff. But I do trust Dylan Johnson. I love his channel. I love his insights into things. Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably got a pretty good feel for, like, hey, given this, you know, we'll say like 10 races, maybe a dozen races or whatever that are pretty popular amongst the pros, like, this is going to be your average or go-to tire.
Yeah. And just out of curiosity, because I'm sure everybody's like, well, what were you guys riding? What tires were you guys on?
I was on 38 IRC Boken Double Cross.
Uh-huh.
So they have a very, they're almost file tread on the top, but have a pretty good side knob on the top, on the sides.
Roll fast, corner hard.
They roll fast, corner hard.
Yep.
They're actually a very fast tire, and And generally, I put a pair of tires on and I leave them until they wear out. Mm-hmm. I don't swap them between races.
Was that the right tire choice for that race?
It was for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not something you're like, I should have put on X.
Nope.
Okay, cool. How about you, Ian?
I don't know. It was the tires that came with my bike.
Probably Centrados.
But I know they're 40 millimeters, mm-hmm. And I ran them at 36, 37 PSI,
the
something like that.
Pirelli Centrado Hard, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
so,
that's
got a good foul tread on it. I can't remember. I think that they've actually changed that tire, but I don't know if it was changed before or after Ian got his bike. They roll really nice if you get the tire pressure just right with them, but those are the type that, for me, the experience that I had with them was, like, you're either overinflated or you're underinflated. There was never a sweet spot that I could find. So if I was overinflated to roll nice on the concrete, because it just cornered really funny, like it was on a rail and it either wanted to throw you in the gutter or like fall over on itself, you'd have to increase your tire pressure to get that cornering down for the road. And then if you rode that high pressure off-road, it just was all over the place, was loose, and then you just vice versa. So they were onto something. I think they have come out with a new iteration of that. So I haven't had a chance to try them because I don't ride bikes anymore, but maybe someday. Anyway, Matt, what are you riding on your gravel bike these days?
Whatever Lance puts on his bike and sells me someday.
Maxxis Rambler 40s. That's what's on that bike.
Oh, yeah. I go big. I mean, I don't think that just because I'm not competitive. Like, I want it to be plush and enjoyable and be able to, if I see some single track somewhere, I want to be able to go after it and not, like, not even hesitate. Like, well, do I have the right tire? Who cares? Like, I want to be able to go enjoy it.
Right.
And I don't care about the, I mean, granted, like, you're on the roads probably 50% of the time. Like, that's okay. I can go slower.
Yeah.
Last bit on this one then. Would be like if Keegan Swenson showed up, it didn't matter what bike he was on, what tire, what wheel, whatever, he would kill everybody. But if Keegan Swenson were to show up to this race and try and be competitive, what would he ride? And that's a question that I would ask myself, and Lance, what would he ride? You probably know. You know his bike intimately well.
He would have ridden a file tread from Maxxis. He's a Maxxis athlete. Sponsored athlete. So they have a couple different gravel file tread bikes. He would have ridden one of those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a Maxxis slick.
No.
Okay. Cool. That's just one.
Not a road slick. No, he would have ridden something else. Yeah.
Gotcha. All right. The next one. It seems like a lot of people, I've been getting a lot of people inquiring about this, wanting to upgrade this particular component on their bike for whatever the reason might be, and that is short cranks. So they're going from like 172.5s, 175s, 170s. They're going all the way down to like a 165. Is the juice worth the squeeze on shorter cranks?
Are shorter cranks better?
That's the question, and that's a topic that we may have talked about before, but I
don't know.
Done some reading and research on this.
It's another one that would be nice to have Evan here for. And I've thought about this a lot because, again, well, actually, the man across the table from me does a lot of time trialing.
I am the most recent time trialist at the table.
You are?
I really do think that it depends on what kind of biking you're doing on the crank length. I think that if you just think about the physics of it and having like a longer crank arm, like you get more
leverage,
torque, you get more leverage. Yeah. And so there's some potential benefits to like some sprint stuff and short stuff. And if you think about it, even like long road stuff where you're like constantly changing pace and things like that.
Yeah. But power is the force times velocity. And the shorter your crank arms in theory, the faster you're turning that pedal. Right?
And so
is that right?
You're right. Yeah. You're going to turn that over faster.
I think all of us need to be like, okay, well, take this to any sort of extreme, whether long or short, and it just doesn't make sense, right? Yeah. Because, again, and a lot of people think this is BS, but I think there's some truth to it. All of our body lengths are different, mm-hmm. and I think to some degree, the length of your leg and your body should somewhat determine your crank length. And I don't think it should be extremes, and I also think like the type of riding that you do, like Lance does a lot of time trialing. Shorter crank lengths really allow that hip angle, if you think about it. Like if you think about those extremes, like where the crank arm's pointing straight up, that's cutting off the amount of like hip angle that you can have comfortably there, and also somewhat closing off your lungs, like you're actually crunching up your whole body.
There is something to be said about that. And there's a what's called a length tension relationship when you're talking about a muscle and its ability to engage maximal force power.
Yes.
So like if you're doing a push up and you go like down almost to the ground and go back up, it's a lot easier versus going all the way to the ground. It's because your muscles get into a situation where they're overstretched and it's harder for your body to overcome that. And it's just the physics of it all. So there is something to what Matt was saying there, but it's, for me, when I think about this, we're talking about the difference between a 165 crank and a 175 crank, 10 millimeters.
You don't even notice it.
It's not that much.
And the latest research is actually saying that crank length is not as important as everybody originally thought it was. And the traditional 2.5 millimeter jumps between crank lengths are really inconsequential.
Yeah.
Two and a half millimeters, you don't even feel it.
You won't notice it. Yeah. And I've switched around a lot, like actually probably even in my garage, I have like whatever, three different like crank lengths and you don't notice it because they're such tiny jumps. And the research that I think you're talking about is specifically like given like an hour, three different crank lengths, like you go out there and you time trial or whatever and the power is just like, it's a wash. You can't distinguish between the difference in just like pure wattage. Yeah. But comfort is king in some of these things. And I do think if you're doing something like time trialing, your position may be slightly better on shorter crank lengths. And the same thing, I still feel fairly strongly that if you're smaller crank lengths, probably, you know, again, if you're smaller, go shorter crank lengths. If you're doing time trials, go shorter crank lengths. Otherwise, the standards are kind of okay.
Yeah.
72.5.
And then with the question, is the juice worth the squeeze? Well, the juice in this case would be the money you spending to replace your crank arms.
Mm-hmm. The shorter ones relatively are
hard to squeeze. Yeah, that's true.
Will you get a lot out of it? Maybe more so as a time trialist like Lance or than a road racer. But
I think that's a big part of it.
Also, paradoxically, my friend and client, Steve Remy, who is a very successful masters level sprinter, he actually just won his race down there in California.
Steve. Yeah.
Yeah. He swears by 165 cranks. He's always ridden them. And so that guy puts down a 1700 watt sprint.
Yeah, right? If you go back to our friend Dylan Johnson, he did a whole video on this and he talked about like, is it worth going to a shorter crank length? And all of the studies that they came out with, all of the journals that he was actually able to like cite, every one of them pretty much said that there's really no true difference. And nobody got any kind of like mechanical advantage for all the things, with the exception of one person, and that was a sprinter. Going with a shorter crank length was able to produce bigger watts for a little bit longer period.
That seems counterintuitive to me.
It's the velocity component. They can turn it over quicker. So
typically, it reduces the time required to increase your power output.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So, but it's not like you're getting greater cadence out of them because that all depends on your gearing.
But here's the other thing, though, is that was like, it was almost not worth it. I mean, if you've already got like a crank and it's working just fine, dropping from like a 172.5 to a 165 isn't going to make that much of a difference. Maybe a couple watts, but is that going to like save you? I mean, there's other ways that you can.
No. I can't even remember.
I did spend money on new cranks for my time trial bike.
Did you?
Back when I used to be a time trialist.
There's someone in the pro peloton, and I can't remember who. Yeah. He's a tall guy, and he swears by like these massive long cranks. And I can't remember what his name is. I feel guilty even bringing
it up. Rohan Dennis? Or
no.
Joe Bird?
It was someone. I mean, I don't think he's like that big of a name, but I remember thinking like, and it wasn't like 175. It was like 185 or one. I mean, it was like quite a lot longer. And I think that's where it's like Lance mentioned this before, it's very hard to find crank lengths that are that much different than 172.5.
Yeah.
It's like you can find 170s and you can find 175s, but getting lower than that, you really have to look for specialty dealerships. I want to say I don't know if it's like Cork. There was one of like the companies that does the oval, the weirdly shaped.
Rotor?
Rotor. Thank you. They do some super short crank arms. Hmm. They do. So that, and I've had quite a few like triathlete buddies that are like, yep, this is the way to go. And you still don't, even when you go ultra short, you still don't notice that much of a difference.
Pretty sure Praxis makes some short ones too.
If
you're looking,
If you're looking. Yeah. I think Wolf Tooth does too. I think people should seriously consider it. It's not that insanely expensive.
There's definitely a scenario for me that I can think of, and now that I'm going through this, I'm curious if once I get back on the bike, if I were to go with a shorter crank length, would that help me through my rehab process? Because like
what Less Matt was alluding, on your hip.
Exactly. I'm just not getting that knee all the way up there, and I'm not getting that impingement and that compression in the hip quite as much. If it's just going to alleviate things a little bit so that I don't get into the situation where it gets inflamed, there might be something there too. So if you've got an injury-related issue, that might make sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Maybe. But again, we're only talking millimeters. It's not much.
I think like 165 is like what I would recommend for a lot of triathletes like that are my size or smaller, which is, you know, that's pretty small.
Just to do a blind study here. I'm going to go swap Lance's cranks on his bike when he's not looking.
He won't even notice. It's so bizarre. I can't notice.
Two things though, too. Oh, shorter cranks, less weight.
And I know what you're going to say for the other one too. Go for the other one.
The other one for crit racers, for tight corners.
If you're pedaling through the corners,
pedaling through the corners, you don't pedal strike. So that could be a little helpful in a crit.
A touch more, yeah.
Yeah. That's a millimeter. That's very interesting. I never really think about that. Yeah.
I got to get back into crit racing. Get that fresh in your brain.
Maybe I wouldn't have separated my shoulder if I'd have had a
short crank.
That's right.
Did you pedal strike? Is that what caused it? Are you hit?
I think so. I don't know. That's the only explanation I can think of.
Yeah.
I was coming around the last corner and then I was on the floor. So I don't know.
It's kind of funny too, if you think about it, in the road bike scene, you've got, like Ian said, you've got these 2.5 millimeter increments that start for most cranks for say SRAM and Shimano, it starts at 165 and goes all the way up to 175. And there's a 2.5 millimeter increment for each one of those. If you get into the mountain biking world, you can choose from 170 and 175.
Yeah. That's it.
Why is that? Why doesn't the mountain biking community adopt the same thing? And is it just because roadies are so fickle and we just need to be able to sell them on like, oh, you've been riding the 172, you need to get a 170, you know, kind of thing. Like, oh, that 2.5 millimeters, that's going to make all the difference in the world for me. Is that what it is? Or is mountain bike onto something here? It's like, 175 is fine, but if you're shorter, we're going to put you on a 170 and just roll with it.
These 2.5 millimeter increments probably came about in the 50s or 60s were long before there was ever such a thing as a mountain bike. So tradition is part of it.
Yeah, there's just such a fickleness about the roadie community and they need to have everything so precise and so right. Yeah, so right. I don't know, curious. All right, you guys ready for the next question?
Ready.
Unless you guys want to talk about that some more. Nope. No? Good? Okay, we're going to jump back into the gravel bike scene. Are the narrow gravel bike handlebars worth the squeeze? Is it worth going from a more traditional 40 or 42 centimeter down to these like 36 centimeter width?
As always, it's going to depend on a lot of stuff. For 99%, I say no. I think it's like, it's nice to have the comfort of like wider stuff and better handling with the wider handlebars. But I think technically more narrow handlebars, I think people that are pros are probably leaning towards that because they're faster.
No.
They put your body in a more narrow position, blah, blah, blah.
Is this, again, going back to what we talked about a couple of weeks ago, is this something that the industry is just trying to sell you just to buy some new stuff or whatnot? Because if you think about it, over the course of time, things are always going to change a little bit. But like mountain bikes, there used to be like a standard width, and then they went to these really narrow handlebars for riding mountain bike. Like you could almost ride with like handcuffs on. And then it jumped from that, like these tiny width handlebars up to these handlebars now that are like 780, 800 millimeters wide. And it's just like this massive, like, all right, wider's better because it's more stable. What is it with road biking, or not road biking, gravel riding? You would think that if you're riding off road, you're going to want something that's a touch wider.
I think this is an influence coming from road riding.
Like I would want wider.
Cycling. Yeah,
I would want wider bars on my gravel bike.
But I bet Dylan Johnson goes narrow.
Maybe
that's my
guess. It's more aero for sure.
Because he's he's a weight weenie for one.
Yes.
Two, he's also he's very competitive at the pointy end of the field.
Sure.
So. I mean, in an event like yesterday, when you think you were on your own for basically over 2 hours, the aero advantage would be there.
Yes.
I mean, for sure. And especially if you had gotten caught right at the end there, you'd be wondering if your bars were too wide.
Right.
Well, here's another crazy thing, though, because, I've got more broad shoulders, so I need something a little bit wider just so I feel comfortable. If it's too narrow, it just feels like it's starting to pinch off a little bit, and it's just not as comfortable to ride for a long period of time. So there's that component for me. But I remember the first time I rode on one of the BMC Cayuse that came with the integrated cockpit, I think those have a 36 millimeter width bar. I'm like, there's no way. And I got out, and granted, I only rode it for maybe a quarter of a mile because I wanted to go test ride it after we got done building it. I was really curious to see how it felt. I wanted to see what this handlebars felt like. And I got on there, I'm like, oh, that doesn't feel bad at all. It was actually kind of comfortable. I'm like, what's going on here? Why is that? And I typically would notice something that's that narrow, but that one, I don't know if it was just the ergonomics, the way that I was sitting on the bike, but it was comfortable. But the bike that I was test riding was your client, Mike Hansen's. Mm-hmm. And he's a big guy. He's probably an inch or two taller than me. And he's just as broad, if not more broad than I am. And that's the bike he rides. He says he loves it.
Yeah.
So,
well, the Kaios is a race oriented bike. So
it is.
And gravel, maybe this is what's going to happen. There's going to be a split between adventure gravel and race gravel bikes. Like, you're going to need both of those. Because on the other end of the spectrum, you have these enormously wide, massively flared handlebars with virtually no drop that
like could even be
straight bars. Mm-hmm. You know, like the complete opposite.
I'm seeing people with gravel bikes now that have a quick release for the hydraulic line. And they're swapping out flat bars. They've got more of an adventure bar. They've got a race bar. They're just kind of putting on whatever the weapon of choice is for that particular weekend. Yeah. Like our teammate, and she's been on the podcast before, Sarah Gates, has a new bike that has that option built into it. And I have to admit, it's pretty cool.
So you can switch from a flat bar to a drop bar without running
knot. She's got some other like kind of crazy, like for the long adventure rides. I think, I want to say, I could be wrong. Sarah's probably going to correct me on this after she hears this, but I want to say that she has three different bars that she's running, or two for sure, but I think she might even have a third on there based on whatever she's feeling like riding that day, which is kind of cool. So kind of neat if you think about it.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. And because it's all the wireless shifting, you just have the right shift pods and you just connect the hydro lines to the bar and you're off and riding.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
I think to answer the question, is it worth it though? I mean, yeah, if you're racing, any aero gains potentially worth it, whether that's narrow handlebars, a speed suit, right, in a gravel race, mm-hmm. or aero helmet, or
is it kind
shoe
of
covers, or
bastardizing
whatever.
The spirit and the just like the whole mantra of like gravel racing, of like what it was, and like it's kind of just like the roadie thing is like seeping into it. And it's like, knock it off.
But that's what that's the evolution of it. That's going to happen as people seek to
get faster.
Yeah. Everybody's going to end up in this, you know, state of shoe covers and skin suit and narrow handlebars,
helmets, Lance.
And we can blame a lot of the people that are putting up good prize money for these big races. Yeah. And I don't blame Dylan Johnson for taking that stuff seriously. And thinking about like socks and shoe covers, like it is what it is. If we're gonna have a professional gravel scene, it's gonna get competitive.
Yeah. If you're out there on your own or with a small group, and that race is like a 5-hour race, you bet that every couple of watts you save is gonna add up at the end of the day.
Yep.
So I guess, is the juice worth the squeeze if you're just your standard, you know, amateur bike racer? It doesn't matter what category you're in necessary, but if you're going to be riding that bike and out having fun on it most of the time and then racing it a handful times a year, is it worth having that narrow bar? Is it better to have that narrow bar on there for the training rides and the fun rides you're going to go do so you stay acclimated to it and just ride that year round? Or do you think it's just better to stick with a wider, more comfortable, more stable situation and go race that and know that, well, maybe I sacrificed a few seconds here and there, but... Is it worth
My answer is 99% is it worth the squeeze? No.
Gotcha.
1% of the people, maybe.
Okay.
And only maybe based on like, do you like riding it? Are you comfortable with this? It is faster, but you still have to have, there's still a lot of little factors. Yeah. So
I think it's super important for your bike to look right. Like those ridiculous flared short and by, drop handlebars.
And by look right, you mean like, needs to have aero bars, needs to be a TT bike.
An aero road bike, preferably.
What say you, Lance?
No, I don't think it's worth it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you guys won't be going to the narrow bars anytime soon?
I'm not going to narrow bars.
Have you guys ever had a gravel bike race where you felt like the lack of aerodynamics or just having a tiny bit more aerodynamic edge would have caused a different outcome for the race?
No, it doesn't usually... It's not normally big group dynamics where that would really make a difference. Although I did wear aero socks yesterday.
Because mm-hmm. Totally why you won. I'm pretty sure.
I wore aero socks kind of as a joke because it's a gravel race. But But and
but
during,
you were by yourself for a long time.
I was all day, man.
I mean, come
on. I was on the front all
and
day.
And you're racing. I just don't. I don't know. I get I get the joke side of things.
But as soon as the gun went and the racing went live, and I was on the front pulling up this climb, somebody four people back said, "It's those aero socks, Lance."
Yeah. You should have had a pointy helmet. If you had a pointy helmet, that would have been golden.
Funny. Yeah, should have worn mine.
All right, good responses there, boys. Another one real quick. Is having a cyclocross bike in this day and age, is it worth the squeeze? Knowing that everybody's got a gravel bike now, or a lot of people are moving in that direction. A lot of the local cyclocross races, you can pretty much get by with a gravel bike, and you're seeing more and more of them come out there because people aren't going out and buying another bike just to race cyclocross. Plus, a lot of manufacturers are just not making cyclocross bikes anymore to begin with.
Yeah, so it's hard to find. Yeah.
Is the juice worth the squeeze to go out and get a very specialized, not the company, but just a very like specific bike that's made specifically for cyclocross? Or should it just be like a gravel bike thing now? Is the juice worth the squeeze getting like a CX bike? That was the question.
I think sometimes it is, right? Again, there's no black and white answer here. But I think for Lance, who takes cyclocross very seriously, the geometry of the bike is just better on a cyclocross-specific bike. It's designed to do what it's going to do, and it's going to handle turns better.
It turns faster.
It's going to turn so much better. And yep. I think also the height of where things are, as far as just kind of being a little closer to the ground, I just think it's going to be a little bit more maneuverable. And Lance is going to have a gravel bike and a cyclocross bike.
So I'm probably the only person at the table that really
could benefit.
You really feel the difference between gravel bike and a cyclocross bike.
I think any of us, if you put us right, we're like, let's go ride these two bikes and take turns switching between, you would be like, oh yeah, obviously this one feels like it's got a lot more, what's the term for the kind of like the length when you're stretching out on it, and it's got a slightly different angle.
It's got shorter seat stays, period.
Geometry's and, definitely.
Yeah, geometry's
different. Yeah. I think we would all be able to feel
head
that.
Steeper head tube angle.
Okay, thank you.
There was one race where I had my gravel bike in the pit as my backup bike, and I flatted bad enough that I had to switch, and I switched to the gravel bike and immediately blew through like four corners because I was trying to go the same speed on the gravel bike around the corners, and I just couldn't navigate them as
it's
fast.
It's like the difference of racing in a Ferrari versus like a trophy truck, off-road truck kind of thing. Like they're purpose-driven, but you could potentially still do pretty well. And we do have teammates that are out riding their gravel bikes on certain courses.
I do. Last season, I did some gravel races, probably cyclocross races, probably five of them, and I did okay. But everybody was saying, if you had a cyclocross bike, it would have been better. And while I'm thinking, there's no way I'm going to buy another bike just to do cyclocross. But then after a few of those sort of near the front but not at the front finishes, I start thinking, maybe.
Because
maybe I need another bike.
You could probably get a very good cyclocross bike, $1,200.
Sure. Yeah.
I bet you could get a very good bike.
Yeah.
I mean, it might not be brand new.
Correct.
But I think you get a very good cyclocross bike. But that's, again, it's very hard for us to say, is it worth the squeeze for everyone when price sensitivity is going to be, I have this problem on my channel all the time where it's like, is it worth $400? Is it worth $1,000? Like, price sensitivity, I don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone's different.
Well, here's the thing, because fewer people are making them, they're getting to be pretty stinking expensive. Yeah. If you want to go out and get yourself, granted, they're going to be making high-end bikes anyway, but a Cervelo cyclocross bike is, I think their entry-level one's like $8,000, and their high-end one's like $10,000 for a cyclocross bike.
With bike prices, we've had this problem on the podcast before.
But there are some other good manufacturers that make some really nice, beautiful titanium bikes, but again, for just the frame set, you're looking at $5,000.
Yes.
It's just wicked expensive, and I'm like, for a race that's going to last you, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
Ish. And you're going to do it five or six times a year, and you're not going to ride that bike other than the times you're going to go out and race it?
People practice with it. It used to be the flip side of this was always you're going to go do gravel riding. You could take your cyclocross bike. Always the case until now where it's almost like, oh no, you're going to do cyclocross, bring your gravel bike.
Exactly.
It's almost like the coin's flipped a little bit. So I don't think it's fair to say that people are only going to ride this bike five times because if you're into it enough that you love cyclocross and that if you're into this sport enough that you're thinking about buying a specific bike, you're probably going to do some training rides with it. Like, I really love cyclocross practice, even though I don't like cyclocross racing. And I think even potentially you might want to do some longer gravel stuff with it.
Yeah. Hard to say. A lot of people still racing gravel bikes on, or not gravel bikes, but cyclocross bikes on gravel races. Like, let me ask you a question, and it could have gone either way, but Paul First, which bike did he ride yesterday? Did he ride his orange Cannondale? Or was he on his...
He was not on the orange Cannondale.
Cat 10 or 5 or, what, or 9 or whatever it is. Okay, so he put some wide tires on that. But in years past, he's done extremely well, but he's riding on a cyclocross bike with gravel tires.
Yeah.
And it's just a little bit sketchier in some of the tight stuff when you're hauling ass. But I don't know. But I do have a question where I think that...
He's also so... I'm always impressed with his bike handling skills.
Oh, yeah. One of the best in the state.
John chose his cyclocross bike above his
gravel bike because he can climb better on it.
It had better gearing, and it was the cyclocross bike's a little lighter than his gravel bike, and
his gravel bike is more like what you categorize as an adventure gravel bike.
Right? I bet you there's also some I don't know this for a fact, so you guys will correct me when I'm wrong, but like I bet you that there are some gravel courses that lend themselves to a cyclocross bike really well.
Sure,
that'd be interesting to be like, this is actually better with the cyclocross bike, but I don't know which ones those would be.
There's always going to be that conundrum of like, which bike do I want to go with? I have a question though for you when it comes to cyclocross. We'll say COVID aside, pandemic stuff aside, even before that, the numbers in cyclocross racing have been declining year over year over year. They're going down, and they have been going down. And, you know, it's a trend across the country, and it's, I don't know if it's a trend around the world. It might be, but there's certain parts of Europe, obviously, that's just always going to be the mainstay. But if you think about it, it's gone down enough to where a lot of the big players in the market just are not making the bike anymore, and they're allocating all of their resources to making gravel bikes because the cyclocross scene is not dying, but it's like...
They're not selling cyclocross bikes. Yeah.
So would it make sense for a promoter then, knowing that, all right, all of these people now have gravel bikes. I can't get people to come out and race as much as they used to in the past. I want to get my numbers up. What if I sanitized these cyclocross courses a little bit where like, you definitely need to have a cyclocross if you want a bike, if you want to be fast through that, maybe make it a little less egregious, a little easier. And it's kind of like, you know, all right, it's a cyclocross race, but it's more geared towards gravel bikes so that they can get their numbers to come up so that they can have more success out there. Do you think anything like that ever makes sense?
I don't, because I think only the top end cyclocross racers would notice the difference in the course and how...
Would they complain?
I don't know if they'd complain, but it might make them question whether they should do that race again if it's sanitized towards gravel bikes.
Is there a way to do it where it's still fun and challenging, but you can get the gravel people to come out on their gravel bike and have fun and not get so blown out the back and telling themselves, well, no, I need to go get a cyclocross bike if I want to be competitive here, but they're just not readily available, they're super expensive, or whatever the case in point might be. Like, what's going to keep them come back on their gravel bike? Is there a way to make this work?
That's a good question. More beer hand-ups.
I don't know. I'm just kind of thinking out loud because you've got like a segment of people that have these bikes. How can you get them to come out and try a different discipline on that same bike without having to go out and buy yet another bike if they don't already have one? Because
it's good. Cyclocross races are the party. That's why you go. Yeah. You go for the party.
But you don't go for the party. You go to hang out with your friends, but you go out there to compete.
I do.
So if they sanitized it and it's you're like, ooh, maybe I just want to ride my gravel bike, you're probably still going to have fun.
Yeah.
It almost becomes like a short course or a short track course for, you know, gravel bikes as opposed to like an actual true bona fide, you know, you can still have the barriers. You can still do that kind of stuff. You just get rid of like the super, super tight stuff. Or maybe you still have that, but maybe you have some sections where it balances out where the gravel bike's going to just blow doors on the cyclocross bike and then they're going to just be trading blows and then you just mix them up together and you figure out which one's going to be best.
There's definitely value in buying a bicycle that can do more than one thing.
Sure.
And I think the industry is starting to realize that now after many years of trying to divide and conquer and make more and more categories. Now you're seeing a trend towards a more a bike that can do more than one thing.
Sure.
And I know in my own case, like I didn't do cyclocross racing for many years because I didn't have a cyclocross bike and I was not going to just go out and buy a bike just to do the occasional cyclocross race.
Yeah.
But now I've got my gravel bike. I'm like, hey, I can now do cyclocross as well because my gravel bike will do fine on that.
Cool.
So,
all right. Got one more last one. I'm sorry.
All right.
Let me squeeze one more in. Is the chamois juice worth a squeeze?
The cream, the juice
butter. Chamois cream is the chamois cream juice worth the squeeze.
The chamois cream is worth it if there's a chance you're going to have the afterbirth. Okay.
Oh, God.
That's you ain't gonna be liking life.
You try to make make it gross, and I just took it to the next level.
I think we know the answer on this one, but
yeah. Do you guys use?
No,
I don't use chamois cream
enough. Well, there's two pieces of it. You're either like you ride enough that you're like don't need it because your body's just used to it. We'll just say we'll leave it at that. Or you don't ride enough to need it. There's that middle part in there that people that really I will say like if I was gonna go do something super long, I probably would.
Do you guys
lather up?
Apply chamois cream to yourself, to your chamois, or both?
If I'm doing 100 miler, it's both. If I'm doing, I don't know. I just kind of depends on like how much I'm going
to
need.
I apply it to myself. But
self?
Oh.
You know, back in the day when it was an actual chamois in your bibs, then it was needed. But today's.
There are some chamois that are pretty smooth. They're silky.
Yeah.
But I still apply it. And I can remember it just a couple times where I forgot to put that on, and it's long rides, and you're like, yep, that was a bad life decision right there to forget to put this on, and you're just desperately seeking something
else. If you were doing a 200-mile ride, let's just say like you're doing like Seattle to Portland, which is, I mean, like, what is that? It's a 12-hour or something? Mm. Not 12-hour. How long did that take?
Nine and a half.
Nine and a half. Okay. So long day in the saddle.
Yeah.
Nothing?
No, I'd put some on then. I use chamois cream on like day 4 or 5 of a big week. Stage race or a training camp or something.
Yeah. Lance has got lots of calluses.
Yeah. I'm freaking leather.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Lance, no pants.
You guys got any other questions?
Out there for the world to see.
You need to ask if the juice is worth the squeeze?
No, that's good. No more squeezing chamois.
Let's jump into one last thing. Matt LeGrand, go and start us off.
Okay, posted 2 videos last week. We just did this. Did we do our podcast on
Thursday?
Friday? Thursday? It seems like we just did this podcast.
Four days ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 2 videos from last week. Koros software and Koros hardware. Mm-hmm. Definitely worth checking that out. This week, if I can get my in gear, I think I'm going to do another watch review from Garmin called the Garmin Venue 3 After 100 Days. I think is what the title of that one.
Nice.
It's been a great watch.
That's been really popular for us.
Yeah. So. I think it has a lot of there's a lot of good looking options for that, and it kind of fits the need. It also has a speaker and a microphone, which a lot of Garmin watches don't do, which means you could press a button and you can, interact with your Siri on your phone. So yeah. there's some benefits to that particular watch.
No flashlight though.
No flashlight, which I think
throw it in the gutter. Go buy another.
Yeah, they need it. Maybe the Venue 4 will have that. Now, I mean, it's not brand new by any means. This is a watch that's been on the market for a while. Mm-hmm. I've just yet to get my button gear to get the review out the door. So hopefully that's the case this week.
Sweet. Thanks, Matt. Sir Ian Gibson, what's one last thing today?
Less than 2 weeks now until Barton Park Road Race on May the 11th. Just like to encourage everybody to please sign up for that. If you have any interest in that, I would say that it's a great course for people that are experienced roadies, or even if you don't traditionally race on the road, mm-hmm. it's a great introduction. The course is such that it should not be an intimidating thing.
Yeah. It's kind of a cool one too, because you can bring out family members and whatnot. And yeah. It's a good one because they'll see you, 4 or 6 times, depending upon what race you're doing, maybe even 10 if you're in that pro field. So
yes, it's a 7-mile loop. So for a lot of people that are going to be going up the Eden Wall mm-hmm. climb 6 times. Yeah. So that's a great spectating opportunity.
Yeah. It's fun having the people on that too. And they're out there yelling at you, cheering you on, ringing cowbells. People are taking pictures. It's quite fun. And when you see the people out there cheering you on, it makes that climb a little less sucky. So
yeah,
even though
I'm hoping there's going to be a lot of interest. All the people I know from the local teams seem to really appreciate that it's being put on, and they're assuring me that the numbers are going to be there, that people are going to come out. And I just want to make a personal appeal to my own team, Dial Cycling Team, to get on there and sign up to come race with us.
If you had to guess and you were to go look at the registration, what team is currently leading with the most registrants? Let's get them competing here.
I don't know. Forza has got a few people in there, and POA.
POA is probably going to show up with some decent numbers, just as long as there's not like a stage race or something like that that day, because they like to go do those.
No, there's no conflicts.
What about like Team Oregon or any of those other bigger teams out there?
Yeah, there's a couple from each.
Best place for people to get their butts out there and actually register, you got the obra.org calendar, their schedule calendar. That links over to dialperformancecoaching.com, which is where the race registration takes place, correct? Or am I wrong? Or does it
happens on
Obra? The other way around, really. So so the Dialed Coaching, the race flyer page links to the Obra registration. So when you click on the register link, it'll take you to your Obra account and you might have to sign in.
Yeah, there's probably a flyer link there too. If you click on that, where you can get more information about the race, it will take you to the dialperformancecoaching.com website where you can read more about
it.
Which
will end up going back and forth.
Yeah, it's a good place to, you can go visit both, just to get more information, which is kind of cool. That's a fun race. I think that everybody should go out there and do it because it's challenging, but it's not like to the point where like, oh my gosh, I'm going to die. Like that, the Eden Wall, the first time you're going to go up and like, oh, that's pitchy dog, a little pitchy. And then like fourth, oh, that's not bad. Fifth, and then sixth one when everybody's getting after, like, all right, this thing hurts, but this is finished. This is go time. I got to get to the top because the finish is just around the corner there. So fun.
And the
fun
way
race.
It works out with that climb on every lap, it splits the field up. Yep. So you're not going to be racing in a massive bunch, you know, shoulder to shoulder with a lot of people.
And it makes for a pretty safe finish too, which is kind of nice. I mean, if you come over the top with like 10 people all together, then it's going to get not dicey, but it's going to be a tight bunch pair. But that just doesn't to be the case with that one. Yeah,
right.
There's some people that will naturally float up there. But if you get dropped just a tiny bit, you can still catch back on. Yep. So cool. Mm-hmm. Right on. Cool. Sign up. Yep. But
one of the talking about having spectators on the course at Barton Park would be great. The hilarious thing about this weekend at Gorge Gravel Grinder, there was one half-mile section that was very spicy, they called it. It was much more rugged. It was a difficult road. But Chad Sperry made the course where you could take the chicken out route and you could go around the difficult section. It was a mile longer, so it was definitely a penalty. And they called it the cheetah shortcut or the chicken out route. So you could go one of other. And when you got to that place, they had a dude in a full chicken outfit running around trying to get people to take the chicken out route.
That's awesome.
And teasing people that were doing it. It was pretty funny.
Do you know anybody that took that route?
Yeah, I know quite a few people.
Quite a few people did it, huh? Any teammates take that?
None of our teammates did.
Okay, good job, team.
Yeah, actually, David Barnett was planning on taking it, but we went out the day before, and David and I raced it at like race pace so we could really see what the penalty was.
Sure.
What was it? It was 3 minutes.
It was the 3 minute difference.
I beat David by 3 minutes.
Wow.
Because it's a mile longer. Sure. That's about right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway.
Juice not worth the squeeze.
Juice not worth the squeze for the chicken out row.
Hep, you got one last thing for us?
Oh, yeah. So this weekend, we have two gravel races on the Obra calendar, the Oregon Coast Gravel Epic, which is the Obra Gravel State Championships.
Oh, that's fantastic. We just had a first race of the season earlier.
Yes.
Yesterday.
So
let's have the championship.
No, there's been another one. Real West Coast happened.
Was that an Obra race?
That was an Obra race.
Oh, never mind. All right. Well, at least the three races in instead of like the leadoff race. But anyway, come on.
So that's happening out at Waldport, Oregon. And then the next day on Sunday is West Coast Gravel in Yakuts, Oregon. So two big gravel races this weekend. It's a kind of a doubleheader. Should be fun. I will not be there. I'm headed to Utah this afternoon. My son is graduating from college, so I am skipping all the races.
You going to bring some bikes out there?
I am taking the bikes.
Mountain bike, everything.
I'm taking all of them because I don't know what I'm going to end up doing or how long I'm going to stay.
Or which race he's going to do while he's out there.
Yeah. I don't know if it'll be a 5-day trip or a
5-month
15-day trip. It could be either one of them. Yeah. Well, I have to be back for Ian's race. This is the only thing I have to be back for on May 11th.
Cool. So,
that's it.
Sweet.
Down that dusty road, you'll find old Jake trying
you got your song.
To pedal his bike. Every ounce of eight used to be pretty okay. The hero in the Navi bike race. Now he's just a ghost with a broken embrace. The wheels keep turning, but his spirit's worn thin. His body's tired and broken. He's fighting against the wind. With every climb he takes, his heart starts to sing.
Right? Jake's starting to cry over here.
The road ain't forgiving and it's got him on the brink. Riding through many tears, Jake carries the pain. Sock'em dreams left in the dust.
What tool are you using for this?
One sec.
Replicate, but he won't give up. No, he won't let go. Though his best days are behind him, he'll muster strength to a Cat 5 race.
Guitar solo.
There you
so
go.
Good.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, I'm just going to let that go. My life has been a country song the last 2 years. I just realized. So, I don't know.
So
I think the only thing
one.
It was forgetting was the fact, you know, maybe a dog died and wife left you kind of thing. Yeah. But, yeah, it is what it is. Anyway, the app, or it's not really an app. It's more of a website. It's called Suno, S-U-N-O.
Okay, yes, I've heard of it.
And
yep.
I looked at a few others, and that one just seemed to be
Suno's good, I think.
The best one that I could find. And yeah. You can hilarious. Get a few free credits where you can make maybe 5 or 6 songs, and then you're done. And then you can go in there and, like, you can edit them. You can edit the lyrics. You can give it a style or a genre that you want. It just makes for a little bit of fun, and you can go in there and tweak it. And if you really want to, like, get a little bit more out of it and you want to pay, it's only like, I don't know, like $8 or something like that for an entire month. And I think you get like 2,500 credits, and I don't think you can make enough songs in the course of a month to use up all those credits. So if you want to play with it for a month and you want to spend $8, instead of going out there and buying a cup of tea or coffee at Starbucks.
I want to look at the licensing and stuff and see what they have. Cause like, I like the idea of like, having something a little more custom in some of the YouTube videos.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. I think you can use them on
so
your
too.
Stuff too. So
anyway,
if you want to go play with that. But. All right, my one last thing other than the fact that I'm a sad country song is we haven't asked for this in a long time, but I would love it if people would jump onto the old Apple iTunes podcast and give us a review or review us on Spotify, because that, believe it or not, helps. And I've been trying to like, put the podcast out in a few other areas because our listenership is getting up and we're getting good feedback from everything. I'm like, well, what happens if we maybe try and get connected with some other stuff? And I was doing a little bit of Google searching, and like, it's kind of neat when you see these organic reviews of people. And I think I sent one to Lance.
Yeah,
it was like 2 years ago. And this guy wrote up a great article about all these cycling podcasts. And like, he had us, it's like the most entertaining podcast for cycling out there. He's like, there's some that are very, very specific that are good for this or some that are that. But he's like, the overall most entertaining, good information. Like, he had us at the top of the list.
He
and
did.
I was like, that's fantastic.
He recommended 6 different podcasts, but he said ours was the most entertaining.
So
thank you, whoever that
I could probably pull that up
thank
and pull
you, thank
it, but
you.
I don't know if he still listens or not. That's great. And there's a few other people out there like on Reddit that have been referring us. And so like referrals are fantastic and it just helps us kind of reach out to more people. It makes it a little bit more fun. And then the reviews though on the different platforms that you can listen to it, that actually goes a long way as well. So if you want to do something, help out the show, maybe it's
great.
Not being a patron, but maybe you want to like just do say something
point.
Nice, go say something nice. On the flip side, if we suck, go tell them we suck.
Or tell us.
Tell everybody if the juice is worth the squeeze listening to this podcast. So, all right. Well, that's another one in the books. Lance, happy birthday, buddy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Happy birthday,
Lance.
Appreciate
it.
Drive safe out to the Utah.
Will do. Yep.
And we will be back next week with another one of these. And until then, bye for now.
Chance to party, let's all elevate. Blow out your 84 candles, make a wish real quick. We're here to cheer.